Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 57. What if your husband had a death wish?
I was 22, and we would always go to this bar in Walnut Creek called The Office. One night, I met my husband, and it was weird. He asked me to go dance with him, and I did. And after that, it was like I brought him home with me, and he never left. He was homeless right when I met him, so it was pretty much a good convenience for him to meet somebody like me who worked and had my own place. And he moved in, and it was fine, and we got along, we fell in love. I didn't know, at that time, he, left his wife because he was mean to her and stuff like that, and he had a couple of children, and I really didn't know that. I only knew what he would tell me, but our lives were okay for a while. We would go to the bars together. He seemed like the nicest guy, you know? Until one time, it was like we were drinking, and something happened, and he blew up at me. When I came home, he was spun on methamphetamine. And we got into an altercation. It was violent, and he pushed me back through a window. And I broke the window, and then he split. I don't know where he went, he split. And then he came back and, you know, kiss and make up, and everything was fine. He ended up getting a job working on transmissions. He started out small and he worked his way up. He did that for a while, and, you know, the money was really coming in, and we had things, and we moved from different places, you know, and we had a really nice apartment, and and then we decided to move up into a house. Gosh, we would go places, and we just had a really good life. You know, I was working at a hotel, cleaning rooms, and all of a sudden, I'm cleaning underneath this bed, and I find 8.5 ounces of cocaine. I called a friend of mine, and we did some, and then I told my husband, and I really didn't realize how much of an addict he was, because the minute that got, you know, out of the bag, right, he was all freebasing and shooting it up and just trying to do it different ways, and even I was shooting it up sometimes, and it was just a bad spun-out scene, you know. And we got married. We ended up getting married because our plans were to get married before I found that cocaine, right? And then all of a sudden it's time. We got rings and we planned our wedding. We were going to go to Reno, right? I remember sitting in a room and him and his friend and me, we were doing cocaine, and they were doing shot after shot. And it was just like, are we going to go? Are we going to go? And we finally went, you know. So we got married, we spent all our money gambling, and we got clean after that. I got rid of the cocaine because I didn't like what was going on. Our marriage went really smooth for a while, and he had a few relapse situations. I met him in 80 when I was about 22 or 21, and then in 86 we got married. It was like a few years clean, and then a relapse would last about 6 months to a year. He completely destroyed a house over in Martinez because I decided not to come home, so he decided to throw everything out the windows. What made him do that is because I wouldn't give him the last $60 that I had for him to get high again. We were driving on Monument Boulevard in Concord, and he was all, you know, he was really mad because I wouldn't give him the money. He ran my car into a telephone pole, and I had my little dog. I was just waiting an opportunity just to get out of the car to get away from him because, I mean, he was going to do something, and I didn't want to find out what it was. He was higher than a kite in the living room of a Martinez house where we both lived. And this was right when the drugs started picking his life apart, and, you know, along with me too. This was before my child was born, and he sat there on the couch with a loaded shotgun, and he couldn't do it. I mean, I heard the click, but no bullet in there, you know. He was really spun on methamphetamine and crack cocaine. He wanted to die then because just, I don't really know what he was involved with. I had an idea by when the people come over, they say they were going to take our stuff or kill us or whatever, you know. And to me, I would just be all, go ahead then, kill me. And he was sitting on the couch completely naked and he had that gun. And I sat in the bedroom and I was just like, oh my God, you know, it's real reality. And I really didn't like it, but what could you do? I couldn't change him. So what can you do? And then being like a codependent, you always think you could fix him. You always think you could fix somebody, but you can never fix anybody. He did a relapse, which lasted about 2 years till he lost all his tools. He lost his job. He ended up going to jail for, what would you call that? Barricading himself in the house and throwing Molotov cocktails at the police. And he did his time in jail, and he got out in about 90, right, 1990. And by then, I had become pregnant. Then I remember one time before, this was like about 91, and we're having a drink, and then all of a sudden he comes to me with an empty bottle of Valiums. There was 20 10 milligram Valiums in the bottle, 20 of them, and he took them. And then he left. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, and this was like a Christmas Eve. All right, go ahead, because I was tired of that. Are you gonna kill yourself? Then do it. I get tired of that, or get some help. He went driving away, but I guess he got a hold of some drugs to straighten him up, you know, and it was like after that, I realized that it took a lot to kill a body. I would always be there to nurse him back to health after his run, where he would be crying and apologizing. And I mean, he really cried from the heart. And I would be there, oh, it's okay, it's all right. And that was probably the worst thing. I probably should have left him a long time ago. One time we were at the Crawdad Festival in Isleton, and we went there as a family, the dog, Trevor, my son, and him. And it was supposed to be a nice, you know, day. And somebody knew me from down here, from Walnut Creek, that knew my brother, right? And he reached out and he gave me a hug. And right after that, no, I was in so much trouble over that hug. It was like, we went back to the car and he's all, get in the motherfucking car, we're going. And it was just like, who wants to get on a Delta Highway road with a guy that's so angry? There's like no way. Once again, I disappeared from him. And then there was one time where we went up to go see his sister, and we were drinking and we got into a fight. And all I could see is that I was blocking punches, punch, 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 punch. And then he left. And by the time I was like coherent, okay, I went up to the levee road and stuck my thumb out and hitchhiked down, you know? And I ended up at my brother's house, and I had two black eyes, a fat lip, you know, my eyes were bloodied, and yet I still forgave him. I still went back. What lured me back to him that time was is that I guess he had his toolbox in his car and he was staying at Motel 6 in Pittsburgh. And he came to me crying, and he was devastated because somebody stole this toolbox out of the backseat of the car. And he was crying over that. I really don't even know if he really loved me. Who knows about things like that? They don't teach you that stuff in high school. They don't teach you real life skills. They don't teach you about boundaries. It's like, what are boundaries? I would nurse him back to health and pay his debts and give him all my money when he'd relapse because I'd be afraid of him. And after a while, when the police tell you you got to do something, you seriously have to do something. We're tired of coming over here. You know, maybe he'd change his life around if he had a child, you know, if we had a child together. I thought it was a way to save him in a way. We did love each other a lot, you know, in and out of those battles and stuff. You know, I still cared greatly. I still would stand up for him. But then his violence, because he was a violent, angry person, and when he got mad at me, I better not catch myself in a corner because I'm trapped. He'd get me, hit me. One time, he picked me up by my throat one time. He got mad at me and he picked me up by my throat in the kitchen and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't do anything. And I knew after that it was basically time to go. I was 38 years old when I decided that since I no longer wanted to be a part of his drug problem and that I was going to get a restraining order and leave him. It was like we were getting evicted out of our apartment, so it was an ideal way, and I slowly moved everything out of the apartment with the little red wagon because I didn't have a vehicle. Slowly move out and pray for the eviction. And by then I'd lost my job. I mean, we were in a 17-year marriage. You know, we had a son that was 6 years old, you know. I mean, how long would you expect a mother to go on in this gangster lifestyle? Sure, I did my share, but people were killing people. Their friends were killing each other. You know, and he was a batterer, and only so much a person could take. One time I decided to finally, this was after I left him, and do something fun, and I decided to go to a Stevie Nicks concert. A friend of mine went with, lo and behold, me and the gentleman were, you know, drinking and partying and stuff like that, and we went to the concert, and then after Stevie Nicks started, I was standing up, and all of a sudden I had a tap on my shoulder. And I turned and I looked at him, and it was my husband, and I had a restraining order out on him. I guess he followed me there. I tried to take off from him and go get security so I could have an exit out of there. When I finally got out of there, he threw a rock at the car, and I doubled back into the parking lot and then walked down to where he was. He climbed a utility pole and tied some jumper cables to the pole, and he was starting to put them around his neck so he could hang himself in front of me. I was traumatized by it. I didn't know if I should, in the beginning, go up there and try and stop him or talk to him or anything. I thought he would probably end up killing me. All the people that were exiting the concert, because it took a few hours, they were either cheering him on or they were telling him not to do it. It was one or the other. Bunch of cars exiting and then a crowd forming below him. Another girl, she was trying to talk him down because her husband killed himself. So it was a big crowd, like when you leave a concert and it's all jam-packed. And there's traffic enforcement there, you know, there's the police there, there's the fire department there on top of that. It was just a crazy, fast-paced situation. They wanted, come on, do it, you know, hang, die. Finally, I had left. I couldn't see anymore, I couldn't say anymore, and I just went back into the crowd and hid. And by then, people were coming out of their vehicles and stuff like that. And then I was waiting to find out what had really happened. The firemen were on the extended ladder to try and grab him as he was reaching out, because I think he possibly might have changed his mind. He was reaching out to a light pole, and he was trying to grab it, and the fire department guy was trying to grab him, and they did touch, and then they slipped, and he hung. And so all I remember is him hanging from the pole. It put me in a state of shock. You know, I didn't know if I was coming or going that night. You know, I was just like, wow, you know, how this is how my marriage ended. It was just true, like, disbelief. It was in August, so it was still daylight when it started, and then he died at 11:38 at night. When they told me, they had to wait to tell me, because they wanted battered women's to come in and to be there when they interviewed me, when, you know, I had to do the police report. I think he planned the suicide because of the things he left behind. He's tried to hang himself before with a vacuum cleaner cord, and his friend told him make sure it was 2.5 feet above the ground. And he did jump off of a patio, and the fire department caught him. And that was in Walnut Creek, like 2 years before that. He's had a death wish for a very long time. And I mean, what do you do? You know, then it was just, life was really hard. When he died, I went home, and then I called Battered Women's, you know, because I needed somebody to talk to. I was by myself, you know. I was like, I was hurt, I was drunk, I was stoned, I was all these things, and it was just like I'm bouncing off the walls in my head. And then I finally went to bed, you know, and when I woke up the next day, my son was coming home from a sleepover, and when I got up, all I can remember is I threw up in the toilet. I was just so upset, and then it was like I had to tell my son, you know, and he was like 6 years old, and I told him, I said, you know, you won't be seeing your father anymore, you know, and I would spend time, you know, hiding my tears because nobody really liked my husband towards the end. I couldn't grieve in front of people. Nobody would just be all like, here, come here, let me take you in my arms. Are you okay? You know, to cry your eyes out. Yeah, nobody that I knew would give me any support about it, really. And I felt alone, and, you know, nobody liked him. It's just like, so his stepmom called me, and she said, I'll pay for everything. We started the process of getting announcements out and, you know, things like that. And it was like, I was still in a shock. It's just like, God, can we just get this over with? You know, I don't know how to deal with this. This is too much, you know? It's like, you know, anything to do with emotions, it was just like, I pretty much couldn't talk about it. No words would come out of my mouth. After he died, I knew that I wasn't going to be followed anymore. I wasn't going to be tormented anymore. I did feel, I wouldn't say a selfish relief, but to this day, I'm relieved that I don't have to be involved with that guy. You know, he was a nut. He was truly a nut. He would kill people. He would, you know, I don't know, maybe he was going to kill me. I don't know. I feel relief, and I feel blessed. I remember my sponsor telling me, my NA sponsor, she was asking me questions on how I managed to meet a mate in an abusive relationship. And she said it was because of the relationship I had with my father. My father was a closet homosexual and cheated on my mom until my mom found out about that. And my father was in and out of my childhood quite a bit. When he picked me and my brother up, he would drop us off at his relative's house and he'd be gone for the weekend, and then he would come back and pick us up. I think it probably could have been my mom. She was always claiming a victim role in a sense, and I always wanted to fix her or make it better. I always wanted to, it's okay, mom, you know, I've always been like that. It's okay, or I'll take her personal inventory and claim it to be mine, which it isn't. Like, my father left her for another man, and she was very hurt and devastated by it. It could have been that, I don't know. If I knew, I'd be able to go forward in a different way of my life. When he died, he definitely left. There was an empty void inside of my body. I couldn't remember the songs that we sang on the radio. For the first year, I couldn't remember what I did the day before. If you asked me what I had for dinner, I couldn't remember. It left a great big hollow chunk out of my body. That's how that felt. At the same time, relief. And it would go like in a wave. After a couple of years, I started going to a support group called Survivors of Suicide. It was on a Tuesday evening, and that gave me my day of grief to sit around a table with a bunch of people who were victims of suicide and us to talk about what we felt. I always found relief when I would go to the cemetery. And I'd go steal flowers off of other people's graves and go stick them on his. My dreams of him, they're like chasing dreams. You know, him right about to kill me. One time I had a dream where he had a gun, he was going to shoot me. You know, and I just said, well, shoot me then. Because after you get afraid so much, after you're afraid so many times, it's like, shoot me then. And if you don't have a gun, I'll go get one so you could shoot me. Because you just have to look at that fear in the face. I started taking drugs, I started drinking a lot, you know, anything to kill my feelings. It was a lot. I had to kill my feelings because they were just too much. I went to a program in 2009, a drug treatment program, and they teach you a lot about codependency. You're responsible for yourself. They teach you how to say things in I statements and quit worrying about what that guy does. Let him go. I would talk about the suicide to the counselor, and she was all, after a while, she was just like, you're claiming the victim, you know? And so she let me wear it out with her, and that was cool. And then she taught me in a way to not claim the victim, to let it go. Let it go. It's done. Go on with your life. I looked up to her greatly. I mean, she had her husband stab her 17 times, take her teeth out and everything. And it was just like, when it came from her like that, it was like, huh, well, she's not claiming the victim. Our fate, it's like, if you believe in God, God knows your fate, or whatever you believe in, you know, a higher power, whatever. The universe, your body knows when you're going to die. You know, I think the body starts going through the process, and you might not even know it, but it was his time to go, you know, and because he went, my son was able to get, we were able to get back up on our feet, right, and live kind of normal, you know, kind of normal. He did. He leads a really good life. He had a really good childhood, you know, and I got a job, and we'd go do things during the weekend and activities, and, you know, it was all about me and my son spent a lot of time together. Sometimes I think, why bother living, in a way? You know, it's not because of what he did to me. It's not, you know, it's because I lost my job and I'm denied unemployment because I have a problem with drugs. And that's where I'm at right now. And I mean, I took a few ingenious ideas from a few friends of mine, and I work solo. You know, I don't sell my body for money. I don't do anything like that. I just figured out a way. You know, life is like, I wish I was taught a lot of these different kind of life skills as I was growing up, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't know. Who grows up and you know, the outcome of a 17-year marriage would be suicide? It was just like, that was devastating, man. He left me nothing. You know, there's a lot of things that I'll never know, you know, about everything, maybe. His suicide haunted me for a long time, and sometimes it still does. I'll have dreams of him, and they'll be real. And when I wake up, it's just like, it's all right, he's dead. He's like, he's dead, he's gone. He's not gonna, you know, but, oh well. I feel like I'm a survivor on this earth, you know, and everybody's got everything, and I have to fight so hard to get it. But a lot of other people do too, you know?